gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages.
And especially you, fat, sweaty wrestling fans. This bout has a 30-minute time limit.
This contest is set for one fall.
Seriously, why even say one fall? It's always one fall.
Oh, you didn't know?
Welcome to Shoot Radio, the only pro wrestling show that threatens its fans with figure five leg locks, triple axe handles, and large packages. Wait, what?
Woo, woo, woo! You know it!
Let's move on. Now introducing the tag team champions from the not-so-mean streets of suburban Toronto. This is The Chris and his partner. And yes, I mean partner like that. From the well-landscaped subdivisions of suburban Chicago, it's Johnny P. Get ready, wrestling fans, to sit through this utterly ridiculous gimmick match known simply as Shoot Radio.
Welcome to Shoot Radio, episode number 6. I am Johnny P. With me is The Chris.
Yeah, yeah. And today, we are talking about tag teams.
Tag teams.
There it is.
Yeah, so we're going
to talk. My favorite thing to say whenever someone says tag team.
So we're talking about the hip-hop duo known as tag team, as everybody knows. Whoop, parentheses, there it is, close parentheses. First off, Chris, got to ask you, where are they? Where have they been? What are they up to? The floor is yours.
Man, I wasn't ready for that.
Oh, wait. Do you want to do the other tag team one?
Yeah, let's talk about wrestling tag team instead.
All right, let me flip my piece of paper over that says the other tag team show. Fine. What a buzzkill. All right. So tag teams in wrestling. Okay. I can work with this. Why don't you
keep... We can reschedule if you need more time.
No, I got this. Why don't you tag me in, huh?
I see what you did.
And I'm holding the rope, you know, like sometimes I have that, sometimes they don't. What's that all about?
I love the tag rope. I thought that was great on old school tag teams.
But where'd it go?
It's one of those things that kind of comes and goes. Like sometimes they have it. I remember in... Well, I was going to say recently, but like within the past 5 years, I remember watching WWE TV and they reinstituted the tag rope. And
sometimes.
I really liked it. I thought it was just a great, like, well, before we get too specific and stuff like that, like I really like tag team wrestling in general. I just thought in terms of like when you have in a singles match two guys, you know, there's certain stories you could tell with a match, but I just feel like, I mean, might seem obvious, but when you have twice as many guys, just the ways you can tell a story in a match, you just have so many more options. Like for the heels, it's so much easier to be a heel because you can do the thing like, you know, okay, I'm going to cut, you know, as Gorilla Monsoon used to say, oh, he's cutting the ring in half and, you know, keep the babyface away from the partner. And then when, you know, the babyface tags in his partner and, you know, the guy does this big fiery comeback and the heels just, you know, are act scared and bail out. Like, I just thought there was a lot more you could do in terms of a match because of that dynamic where, you know, a ref can't, you know, in the wrestling context, a ref can't watch four guys at once.
Would you say tag team wrestling is, in a way, kind of exponentially more, I don't know what the term is, you know, more, I don't know what the term I'm thinking of.
It's just a profoundly different.
Well,
it's almost like a different sport when you think about it.
Well, I mean you stated it pretty well, as in you could do more with the storylines and storytelling. I shouldn't say storylines, storytelling. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, I don't know the word I'm looking for. Maybe I'll find it in a roundabout way. But what I mean is, when you're a heel tag team, you've got several things you can do. You can have, oh, the ref's back's turn, we're going to cheat a little bit, or we're going to switch out people. Oh, we're twins, we're going to switch. Oh, we're wearing masks, we're going to switch. Oh, I'm going to choke you when you're in my corner. I didn't do anything, ref. But then when you're a face and you're a tag team, you could do the whole, oh, he's getting beat up, he's getting beat down. And the guy's like, come on. He's reaching the arm out. It's like, oh, he's right there. Oh, he's so close. He pulled him back. Then he finally gets in. It's bam, shoulder block, bam, clothesline, you know, arm drag, Irish whip. And it's like that nonstop flurry of moves. It's almost like tag team wrestling is a, for lack of a better term, pro wrestling on theoretical steroids. Where it's
wait, there's gambling going on?
wait, what? So there's you're basically you're I don't know, putting that match into second gear. I don't know how to say it, but what I'm trying, you know, it's that kind of, it's almost a safety net in a way too, you know, where wrestlers that aren't quite ready for the, you know, main events or mid card.
Yeah,
you know.
It's a great way to hide shortcomings. Like, I mean, I think one of the best examples of that, you know, like I always do, I'm going to go back to the 80s, but when you had, do you remember the Colossal Connection?
It was that, Wait, no, was that Dino Bravo? I forgot who that
was. No, that was Andre and Haku.
Ah, okay.
And that's when Haku was, you know, a lot younger, and he was the workhorse in the match, and Andre, that was, you know, really dying days of his career when, you know, he could still draw based on his name, but he could barely move. But, you know, a tag team was perfect because you had, I mean, you had Bobby the Brain as well. I mean, that takes anything up a level. But, you know, you could use Andre in that capacity because you could have Haku out there, you know, doing all the, well, for the time, flashy moves. And then, you know, Andre just has to, you know, lumber in for a second, you know, choke a guy, give him like his, I'm going to hold onto your hair and headbutt you from behind move. But that was all that needed to happen. And then Andre could tag out because that was all he could do. And, you know, you're not, it's not like you're having to sit there and watch Andre. It was almost like you had a way to use Andre still use his star power, still have him come in and do some of his, I don't know if you can call a headbutt a signature move, but, you know, the kind of thing he was known for. And it's not like you're having to work around the fact that, you know, you have to put him in there for 10 minutes and it's going to look bad because he's so limited. You know, you contrast that today where you don't see tag team wrestling as much. Like, I think today, a guy like the great Khali, I mean, I think he could be used a lot more effectively if you had him in a tag team where, you know, he can be that imposing physical presence on the apron. And it's kind of like, in a weird way, it builds anticipation more because you're like, oh man, you know, when's the big guy going to come in and drop the hammer type of deal?
I agree with you partially. I agree with you in that you can hide shortcomings and have that big guy like, oh man, if once he finally, he's getting beat up, when he finally tags in Khali, man, everyone's getting choke slammed. I can agree with that. However, to go back to your Andre example, there's a big difference why that match and that I guess tag teams with Andre are huge, no pun intended. Andre already was a main eventer. He makes that match a draw. He makes that tag match, which would normally open up a pay-per-view or be the second or third match in on a SummerSlam, he makes that elevated to close to main event status because you have Andre the Giant, former champion, former I could beat anybody, eighth wonder of the world kind of thing, and it becomes just this match is now a big-time match because of his name. It's not strictly because of his size.
You're 100% right in that regard. I mean, you know, Khali was just sort of an example. I just wanted to pull out a guy that was, you know, still wrestling, that's, you know, a guy that's an imposing physical specimen. But
oh, I know why you brought him out.
Is not particularly talented. But if you had protected Khali like that all along in his career, and this also is, you know, assuming some other things, like, you know, there's a meaningful tag team division, which, you know, is a good segue into maybe the next subtopic around
tag
teams.
Well, let me say, I know why you brought up Great Khali. You've got a shit ton of Great Khali action figures, posters. You've got his own Great Khali gym shoes. And you want to somehow
with
see
with the curly
his,
toes.
Yeah, you want to see his internet wrestling, what do they call that? Internet wrestling community?
IWC.
Yeah, I hate that. You want to see his IWC stock go through the roof. Because, you know, we got millions of listeners. And if all of them hear you talk about, Great Khali's the best, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, all of a sudden, your stupid-ass posters are now worth money. They're hitting eBay. You just made yourself a fortune. Case closed. End of story.
Why you gotta hate?
What? Hate on Great Khali? He sucks.
No, on me.
Oh. Well, you're not great either.
My wrestling name is the OK Khali.
You're extra medium.
Yeah, extra medium.
XM.
So, what's your thoughts around, because Andre obviously probably better known for being a singles wrestler. What's your thoughts on thrown together tag teams versus guys that primarily, I'll say, exist as a tag team?
My thoughts on thrown together tag team. I know exactly what you mean. Here's a prime example. Austin and Shawn Michaels. they formed a tag team. I think they had the belts too for a little bit. You know, my issue with that is I don't like it, first off, but I'm okay with it on a Raw or on a because that type of match is commonly used to further single storylines. Happens all the time. You take main event face and mid card face, or you know, higher mid card face. Put them in a tag team against main event heel and mid card heel. And that way, in the match, they both get to fight each other, but then they also, usually they'll start opposites versus opposites. They won't have the actual feud to start. That way it's mixing it up, and it's like, oh, this, I'm going to beat this guy up, but I'm gunning for you. This is just a preview of what you're going to see next week. That happens all the time, and I'm totally okay with those tag team matches. What I'm not okay with are throwing together tag teams that get a push as a tag team. I hate it so much. It drives me crazy to see two main eventers just thrown together. I don't care if they want to make a funny nickname. Hey, we're Show Miz. I'm Miz and Big Show. Like, I get what they're trying to be funny, but the reality is it does not make sense at all. And all you're doing, you're just two singles wrestlers. Now, with that said, the other part that irks me is the whole going backwards. I won't touch on it too much, but I don't like when you hold the WWE title or the world title, and then 2 years later, you're fighting for the IC title. That bothers me too. I think that same problem, it's almost like a pro wrestling OCD issue I have. I think the same, whatever causes that problem in my fucked up mind is the same thing that happens in regards to tag teams. It's almost like I have this gauge in my head that's like, wait a minute, this isn't right. You guys are beyond this level. You guys shouldn't be doing this. You don't have the built-in chemistry. You don't have a storyline. Yes, you've wrestled a bunch together, but it doesn't mean anything. Even if you develop some double team moves, it doesn't matter. It doesn't make sense to me. So it's almost the same kind of weird wrestling mental issue I have with it. What do you think about that?
I agree with pretty much all of what you're saying. I think that has a lot to do with the fact that for a long time, probably since around 2000, there hasn't really been a real tag team division. And that's underscored by the fact that, you know, you're seeing the tag team titles defended in dark matches on pay-per-view days.
Yeah.
I really liked back in the earlier time periods where you had guys that were dedicated tag team wrestlers, and you'd have a pool of, you know, 5 to 10 different tag teams that could actually fight over the belt, so you wouldn't have to throw guys together. And you'd hear that in the commentary too, when an established tag team would be taking on two thrown together guys, you'd hear the commentators say, well, this guy, he may be a world title contender, but you know, tag team wrestling's a whole different game, and you know, they don't have the experience working together that these guys do. And that was a good way to, you could have two maybe more established stars together, but you're kind of elevating and putting over the tag team as better because they know how to work together more and they know the tricks, like, you know, slapping your arm when the ref's back is turned to make it think, yep, like he hears a tag and stuff like that.
That helps. And I think when a thrown together, I don't know, we should almost come up with a term for that, you know, like a mishmash or just a, you know, kind of tag team where if they're wrestling against an established tag team and that established tag team, you know, is being put over, I'm okay with that. But I just don't see it as much anymore. And it's funny, you mentioned that 2000, maybe 2001 time period. I thought in pro wrestling, that was, I think, the best era for tag team wrestling because you had pay-per-views where fans looked forward almost more than some of the main events to Dudley Boys, Hardy Boys, Edge and Christian. There's probably a few other ones.
New Age Outlaws. I mean, you know, it's easy to make fun of them, but at the time, those guys were over.
Oh, big time. They were champs for a long time, too. New Age Outlaws. I'll say it, too cool.
I mean, for sure. Over.
Yeah, and went for a while. It did happen for a little bit when it was Shawn and Triple H as DX. That I was okay with because that was their gimmick. They were a two. They were the two.
There
guys
was history to draw
over.
On there.
Yeah, and that was the two guys taking over. It wasn't just thrown together. So you had that era, late 90s, early 2000s, of I think some of the best time period for. I don't want to say strictly quality of tag team wrestling. I'm not talking about the technical ability. I'm talking
but just
about
depth,
the depth and the push and how over those matches were at a pay-per-view. And they were huge. They were huge. Those tables, ladders, chairs, Dudley's, Hardy's, Edge of Christian. It was insane. Those were awesome. Great matches, great storylines. The fans were with it every step of the way. Then I think part of the downfall to tag team wrestling in WWE are the developmental territories. Those territories teach you be an individual, draw from the crowd and use that. And now get your gimmick going. And they that's part of the training. It's not as much of let's just learn how to wrestle and then we'll get into a tag team and that'll be our foot in the door, such as Shawn Michaels and the Rockers, Bret Hart and the Hart Foundation. That was the way it was back then. Now it's not that way. It's you're an individual, and you do anything outside of that, you're only hurting yourself and putting yourself at jeopardy.
You know what else I think it has to do with, and not to name drop, but I actually asked Jim Cornette this question on a call-in radio show. Yeah,
nice.
I'm that cool. Because Jim Cornette's a huge proponent of tag team wrestling, and I just asked him, I said, why do you think tag team wrestling in today's nationally shown wrestling shows isn't as big a part as it was, you know, 10, 15, 20, even 30 years ago.
And let me guess, he hit you with a tennis racket.
Well, it was over the phone, so he couldn't, but...
Well, he said he was doing it.
That's right. But his answer was compelling and something I would have never thought of. He said, you got to remember, back in like the 80s and even into the 90s, if you were a tag team and you had the territories, you were moving from territory to territory together. And a lot of the time, your contracts, or your, maybe not contracts, but your agreements with promoters hinged on moving around with this other guy. And kind of what you were saying about being an individual, just in terms of characters, it's also an individual in terms of the way that you do business. You don't have guys that stick together the same way, not for any particularly bad reason, just the way that companies are either... You know, you're either in a national company or you're on the independents. You don't have that period of time over a course of years where, you know, you can, if you are an established tag team, you can plan out and say, okay, we're going to be in Florida for this year. Then we're going to move to Minnesota. You know, once we do our run there, we're going to go to Minnesota. Because the way that the business has changed, evolved, whatever you want to call it, you don't have guys joined at the hip in the same way. And that was something I never would have come up with on my own, but it made a lot of sense to me.
So it's almost like a which came first, chicken or egg kind of thing. Which destroyed tag team wrestling? I know destroy is a bit of a harsh word, but I'm going to stick with it, though, because that's kind of, in a way, it's kind of what it is, at least in the, you know, in the WWE. Was it the fact that there weren't viable tag teams coming up together and available that were talented enough could be, you know, taken and given the belts? Or was it the WWE saying we'd rather go with individuals, and then when it comes time for a tag match, we'll just throw them together? Which do you think came first?
Well, if I can extrapolate from what, you know, the comments I heard Jim Cornette say, if you have two guys that form a successful tag team and you identify them as working well together, I would tend to think that odds are, I mean, guy one has his contract negotiated and he's there for, let's say, 2 years. And the guy after that, he may have, you know, only negotiated 1 year. Well, what do you do when that year is up and for whatever reason you don't want to re-sign guy one, but in the eyes of the fans, they're still a legitimate or well-received tag team? I can understand from the business perspective the mentality of, we don't want to have this person's identity completely sewn up in a tag team, because if anything happens to that other guy, or we have to release him, or for whatever reason, all of a sudden you're down two guys effectively, because you've got you know, it's like a bike with one wheel. You know, what are you going to do with this guy that only has his identity as a tag team? So
for liability reasons.
Yeah, or just to have the flexibility to know what to do with your guys. Now, that being said, it's not like we've got in today's wrestling, at least in the one national company, this litany of stars that, you know, they're scared to pair up with anybody because, you know, for the fear of them ceasing to be stars anymore. But at least at a theoretical level, I can understand why that happened. But that being said, and bringing up Jim Cornette a lot, and I tried to find this article online and I couldn't, and I can't remember if he wrote this. I don't think he wrote it on WWE.com when he was there, but back in the mid to late 90s, Jim Cornette, and I think with the help of somebody else, I may have that wrong, but he did an article expressing his fondness for tag team wrestling and backed it up with data saying that the periods in time when wrestling was the hottest in terms of drawing crowds and making money completely correlated with when the tag team divisions were at their greatest amount of depth, let's say. And it was really interesting to read. He wasn't trying to say that business, you know, could solely be attributed to the fact that there was a deep tag team roster, but it was just interesting to see how he was talking about, you know, in the AWA when the Road Warriors were there. That was sort of at the time when guys like Larry Zbyszko and Nick Bockwinkel were feuding over the AWA title and doing great business.
I think that's really a cool kind of basis on having stats, so to speak, to back things up on that. And I think it's totally true. I look back to me getting into wrestling when I was a kid in the 80s, mid to late 80s, and I watch it with my friends. I didn't watch it alone. I mean, sometimes I watch it with my dad or maybe my brother, but a lot of times with my friends. And guess what else we would do? We would act out the moves. And our corner of the couch was also our top rope. And by the way, fun little side note, no one could ever go to the second rope. That wasn't allowed because there was no second rope. It was the top or the or the bottom.
So you didn't have the top rope versus second rope superplex debate in the context of your couch?
No, we weren't allowed to do that. Don't try that at home, kids. That's the only move. Don't try that one at home. Everything else is cool, though. But when we were kids, we would act it out. And guess who we were when we acted it out? We were the British Bulldogs. We were the Hart Foundation. I wasn't acting out as Hulk Hogan. Although, sometimes I did a Macho Man elbow drop. But that was me transforming characters in the heat of the moment, of course. That was let's play the match out as the Hart. Let's play the match out as Hart Foundation. But when I hit the top of that couch, I'm going to be Macho. Is that cool? Yeah, it's cool. It's my house, whatever. And I'm going to drop the elbow on your face. But all kidding aside, we like the tag team. We identify with them. And I think a good tag team combined with a good tag team division that gets its push, gets its due, goes a long way. Because people identify with teams and friendships and those kind of, not to sound kind of gay, but like relationships, you know, where it's...
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at earlier in terms of there's so many stories you can tell. Like the breakup of a tag team is one of those stories you can go to over and over again, and you can tell it in so many different ways.
Oh, especially over a girl. I mean, I know it's been done a million times, but I don't care. It's always going to be compelling.
Because everybody can relate to that.
Yeah, a tag team breaking up with something to do with a woman, it's always going to be compelling. It's always going to happen. There's just certain givens in pro wrestling, and that's always going to be one of them. Because just like it is in the movies, do you think we'll ever not have a movie where a girl comes between two guys? I mean, it happens. So stuff like that you can do in tag team wrestling. You can't always do that in singles. So I really miss it. And that's one of the things I miss the most about Attitude Era WWE is, man, what happened to those tag teams? I got so into it. Those were great matches, great rivalries, great storylines. You had tag teams were more apt to use managers, which we talked about on a previous episode, you know, how effective managers and stables were. Speaking of stables, you can form tag teams within a stable. So that it develops into a storyline there. There was a time when I think back to, you know, Randy Orton took DiBiase Jr. and Cody Rhodes under his wing for Legacy. So it was like, okay, we have three, but we're going to make a tag team out of the two. And so Orton would come out and help them, and that became part of the storyline. And then one turns on the other one, and that becomes a match. And then before you know it, you got a handicap match. I mean, you have so many different things you can do based on a tag team, a push, and a breakup scenario. And it just, it's almost like it's a very closed-minded mentality WWE has had for a long time.
I feel the same way about the, like, one of the best storylines, I think, in terms of the way it was done, was just what you said over a woman, and it wasn't with a true tag team, but I'm thinking of the year long build to the Hulk Hogan Macho Man feud.
Yeah,
I mean if you just go back in the Wayback Machine, you know, WrestleMania 4, it was, you know, off camera, you know, Hogan was going away to do movies, so they had that tournament to fill the vacated title, and Hogan and Andre double DQ'd each other. Which was cool because
that was insane.
It got them both out of the picture.
That was like, oh my god, this is actually happening! Wow,
yeah.
I can't believe this is real.
So, I'll go on the record and say this is probably my favorite moment in wrestling. This is just proof that when wrestling's done right, it's amazing. I kind of flip flop between this and the ECW moment and the invasion angle. You know, a lot of the stuff that may have fallen out of these moments may not have been so great, but for, you know, for a specific moment in time, right after Macho Man won the title in the final round against Ted DiBiase, and Hogan and Macho Man are in the ring celebrating, and Elizabeth comes in, and Hogan, I think he like lifted Elizabeth on his shoulders, and all Macho Man did, he just turned and he gave Hogan just like a quick turn of the head, just a quick look,
like almost like a what. What are you doing, bro? Kind of look.
And then went right back to celebrating. But that was so perfect. It was like right away you could see, okay, now I know where the whole next year of storylines is going. And then they were fine for a long time. But it was just that one moment. I was just when I look back at that, I'm like, that is awesome. Like, that is what is amazing about wrestling in terms of storytelling.
Well, especially Macho Man, too, because he could pull off anything.
Yeah. But it just shows how, like, people, not to get into a defensive conversation about wrestling, but when people say, oh, why do you watch wrestling? It's so stupid. But, you know, when it's done right, the storytelling is amazing, because that was all conveyed with body language.
I agree. Real quick, we should probably do a future episode. Maybe I want to jot this down. I'd like to do a defending wrestling episode. I think that would be a brilliant topic. Mainstreamed wrestling defense or something, because I have a ton of great stories and things that happen. But let me ask you about that moment. When you were watching it live, or maybe not necessarily live, but right in that same era, did you get it? Like, did you know that was happening? Because I didn't, but I'm also a little bit younger. I was like, when was that, 88? Was that 80, or 87?
I won't say that I knew, oh, okay, this is going to lead to this, this, and this, but I'll say I noticed it.
Okay.
You know? It's like, oh, you know, you had this perfect moment, good conquers evil, but after I watched it, I'm like, oh, why did Macho Man look at Hogan like that?
I had no clue. Wow.
But I'm thinking back to that moment. Yeah, but again, you know, I was 15 or 16 at the time.
So you saying I wasn't banging chicks at 11? Come on, man.
Yeah, and... I wasn't at 18, so don't even worry about
not,
it.
Not at 11, not at 21, not at 31.
Again, kind of restating what I said earlier. I didn't know what it all meant, but I noticed it. And to fast forward a few months down, when it was getting a little more heated, the next kind of moment they did like that, Hogan and Macho Man were wrestling the Twin Towers on Saturday night's main event. And something kind of happened where Macho Man got hit with a nightstick, and he didn't see who did it. And then he picks up the nightstick. You know, Hogan and Macho Man won the match. And I can remember Macho Man picking up the nightstick, looking at it, and just looking at Hogan really quickly, like, did that guy hit me with a nightstick? And it was just little subtle things like
that. Now, wasn't it? But it was also because they had the first SummerSlam was that year, I believe, and you had the Mega Powers and the Mega Bucks, right?
Yeah.
And so that happened. All along, this other mini little kind of jealousy thing was building up, but still, we were a tag team. We were buddies. We were friends. There's a girl in between. It hasn't come to anything yet, but I'm kind of, I got some suspicions. And that only happens in tag teams.
Yeah, and just, you know, that kind of speaks to, and, you know, it's, you could do that kind of build, because, I mean, it's easy to say, oh, you know, wrestling writers or promoters or whatever aren't as patient anymore. But, I mean, then you had three, maybe four pay-per-views a year. I mean, you could do these long, drawn-out builds. It's kind of the business model in terms of how they draw people every month to buy pay-per-views just, to a large extent, doesn't allow for that. I think it's unfortunate in terms of the...
You mean now?
Yes.
Well, but that's no excuse to why there's no tag team push now. There is no valid excuse
right
now.
I was just making more a comment of why storylines don't last, you know, a year like that one did.
Sure, and that I agree with. But if you look back in the Attitude Era, we had pay-per-views every month just as we do right now. So there's really no valid reason. Going back to the kind of, you know, tag team downfall, so to speak, I don't know why, and I there's no valid reason, and that's what drives me the most crazy.
I think it also has to do with the fact that, speaking specifically of WWE, because if you look in TNA, they've got a pretty good tag team division with teams like the Motor City Machine Guns, even, you know, Samoa Joe and Magnus. They've got some good tag teams there. I think in WWE, one of the reasons why tag teams aren't getting as much traction is they have the two world titles and the two secondary titles. So,
too many titles causes too many title-esque storylines, and there's no room for others. I can see that.
It's hard not to repeat yourself, because you look at Ring of Honor. I mean, they've got a fantastic tag team division with Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin and Briscoe Brothers, all kinds of teams. So I don't think it's that, you know, people aren't into tag teams anymore. I think it's, for WWE's case, I think if they discarded the duplicate titles, you'd have room and you could make the tag team titles seem important again.
If they unified the two world titles but didn't change anything else, and I say that next line because there used to be IC and European title. European title's gone, so now it's IC US title. Technically, should be merged, but let's leave them alone. If just the top two were merged, do you think that alone would cause a tag team division push?
I wouldn't say it would cause it, but I would say it would give you the TV time to devote to it if you wanted to.
Okay. It's weird because I think, like, the pay-per-views go by where IC titles not defended, US titles not defended. It just happens. And tag titles, like we were talking about, not defended. So I think the TV time is there. I think it's always been there because you have these champions of mid-card titles that just walk around with the belts, and every now and then they'll have a match on Raw, and it's not even for the belts. So I think it's there. I don't know.
See, I think that's also intertwined with a point you brought up earlier about guys having won the world title, and then they regress to winning the secondary title. It's so blurry in terms of what tier these guys are at. I think that has a lot to do with why the titles have less meaning, because, you know, not to be too topical, but you look at a guy within relatively recent history, you know, you've got, at this past WrestleMania, you had Big Show fighting Cody Rhodes for the Intercontinental title. Well, you know, 10 years ago, Big Show was a WWF champion. Now, right. He was, you can make arguments as to whether or not he ought to have been there or not, but when you're looking at, you know, this guy was positioned as a world title contender. It should be, if you're going to regress a guy down a tier like that, there should be a really compelling reason to do that. One of the reasons that I would think of that you would is if it's a guy that's really in the twilight of his career and you want to use his star power to make a guy seem meaningful, then I think it's okay. But when you've got guys bouncing back and forth, I think it just gets confusing for the fans, you know, what those titles even mean. Because there was a time when I was a wrestling fan, and this isn't, I won't even say this has to do with titles changes going more frequently, or title changes occurring more frequently. There was a time when I could count back in my mind a significant amount of time and, like, in chronological order, name the champions.
Sure.
And even though it's more frequent now, I think the fact that I can't do that anymore, or I stopped being able to do that, had more to do with the fact that a title change was less meaningful. But we're kind of straying from tag teams.
We are. You know, and we're going to have an episode that covers, I'd like to cover titles in general, and maybe we'll play a little fun quiz game against each other about.
I'm going to cover you for the title.
All right, that's good. Why don't you let me get my thought across? All right, asshole.
No, I tagged in. It was a blind tag. You didn't see it.
The ref didn't see it, so it didn't count. But I'd like to do another episode where we actually we'll cover titles, and I'd like to do a fun little kind of, you're looking at the actual list, and I've got to name them of one of the titles, and then we'll do the same for you for the different title. Straight off memory, just to see if what you're saying is actually the case, and I'm pretty sure you're right. But going back to tag teams, let me kind of switch gears a little bit on this and ask you, who is your favorite tag team of all time? I know, you can go ahead and pause, whatever. I want to know your favorite tag team, why they were your favorite tag team, and yeah, and see where you take it from there.
I will go on record and say that the British Bulldogs were my favorite tag team of all time.
Nice.
Because at the time, that was when I was getting into wrestling, and particularly Dynamite Kid, he was kind of the Chris Benoit of his day, not in terms of murdering his family, but in terms of the moves that he would do. And, you know, I mean,
you got an eye roll and a chuckle out of me for that one.
Time heals all wounds. But that was terrible. He just really stood out to me. I just really thought they were something different, and I liked them a lot. And I thought the feud that they had with the Hart Foundation was a really well-booked feud, just in terms of the way that they won the titles. And my love for the British Bulldogs was underscored by the book that Bret Hart wrote, because I think we talked about this not in a shoot radio, but I really liked Bret Hart's book because of the fact that he wrote sort of the most about the period that I remember most about wrestling, because it was what I saw first. And when he was describing stuff from backstage, I could conjure up the exact mental image in my mind of what was going on the television. And the one story that I'll just share, spoilers if you haven't read Bret's book that came out like 4 years ago, but I remember this so clearly. There was.
You better not be Canadian. Do not fucking spoil that for me.
I remember there was advertised, I think a week ahead of time. This would have been like 88, I think. They advertised that the British Bulldogs would be defending the titles on Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon TV, which was unheard of. You know, you would maybe see, you know, photo stills or highlights if there'd been a pay-per-view, but you never saw stars wrestle stars on the afternoon show. You had to wait once a month for Saturday night's main event, let alone a legit title match. So I remember all my friends Friday afternoon at school, we were talking about it. And the thing I remember about that match in particular was that when the British Bulldogs came down to the ring, Davey Boy was piggybacking Dynamite to the ring. Which I remember seeing and thinking, oh, I've never seen him do that before. But thinking back now, it's like, okay, you know, they're baby faces, they're good friends, whatever. He's piggybacking his partner to the ring.
They're lovers.
And in the storyline of that match, I forget who did it, but Dynamite was standing on the apron and he got hit with the megaphone and fell to the floor. And Davey Boy had to wrestle the rest of the match pretty much by himself. And they lost the titles, and you know, Monday morning at school, it was like, you know, the British Bulldogs lost the tag team titles. Like, I can remember in the locker bay at school, like, that was a big deal. It was like where you were when Kennedy got shot. Like, where were you when the Bulldogs lost the titles? But in Bret Hart's book, I remember reading about that, and I guess the reason that he was piggybacked to the ring and that he got knocked off like that was that Dynamite was in really, really rough shape, to the point where he couldn't walk down to the ring. Like, he would have been hobbling down to the ring. People would have noticed, and it would have looked weird. So they did the piggyback just to get him to the ring, and then he was able to get himself stood up on the apron and took the bump to the floor. And that was just their way of sort of getting around the fact that he couldn't move. And it's just a testament to how talented some of these road agents are at coming up with creative ways to do matches. Because at the time, I had no idea. It's a different era. I mean, there was no, you know, reading the Observer online and stuff like that. But it was just, I had no, they completely covered the fact that he was essentially unable to walk. And so I'll tie that back to my point that I made originally, is just how you can do that in a tag match. You couldn't have done that creative outcome for that match in a singles match, at least not in the same way, or it would have been a lot more obvious that, okay, something's obviously wrong, that they have to cover this guy up in that way.
Yeah, it would have been, why Sergeant Slaughter carrying Macho Man to the ring right now? That's weird.
So that was my long-winded answer to my favorite tag team. How about you? What's your favorite?
Well, as always, I'm going to cheat with my answer and give a two-part answer, like I always do. My real answer is the Dudley Boys. But since we just had an ECW episode and I talked a lot about them, I'm going to have to give my second choice. And my second favorite tag team is, much like you, in a very historical kind of when you were kids. And this is the tag team that really connected with you. And you also mentioned Bret Hart. For me, it is the Hart Foundation. And kind of funny, I believe on an earlier episode, we even talked about them in depth on stables and all that. But as a tag team, just Bret and Jim the Anvil Neidhart, they had a great chemistry. They had both in matches chemistry, in promos chemistry. You had the whole, when they were heels, they were great, because Jimmy Hart would do whatever it takes to help him win, hits you with a megaphone, he's yelling at you, doing whatever. And then when they were faces, you had kind of like the commentators, Gorilla would say, like, you know, real men can wear pink. You know, these guys can walk in a dark alley and they're wearing pink and they'll kick your butt. You know, and that's the kind of stuff. It was always like, as a kid, it was like, oh, I get what they're doing there. I got the whole, heel face kind of thing as a kid, in that, okay, they're the same guys. They didn't change at all, but it's how things are being perceived and how they're playing along, both in ring and outside of ring. And I really like that a lot. And not to mention, their in-ring stuff was just phenomenal. You had Jim the Anvil Neidhart as the power moves. You know, he'll, for their finisher, the heart attack, he'll hold him up. Bret will run across the ropes and clothesline him. Great move. They did a lot of great double teams together. And, you know, it really skyrocketed Bret's solo career from there, which I think that, even though we talk about tag team wrestling, I think it's important to note, at least in my, you know, goofy wrestling OCD brain, it's, okay, you're a tag team. You're a good tag team. Now you're a great tag team. You've had the belts. You've done it all. Now who's going to take the next step? Both? Maybe. Probably not. Which one of you is going to take the next step to singles and have a breakout career? It was Bret with the Hart Foundation. It was Shawn with the Rockers. To an extent, would you say Davey Boy? Not really breakout, but, you know, more so.
It's a little different because they didn't do a real breakup angle with the British Bulldogs, but you've touched on some, I'm glad you went this way, because it's something I want to talk about. You know, there's kind of a built-in tragedy to tag teams, because for most babyface tag teams and a lot of heel tag teams, a built-in storyline is around the breakup of the tag team, whether it's, you know, over jealousy or over a girl or over anything like that. But it's almost inevitable that when you do that, you're gonna have a Shawn Michaels and you're gonna have a Marty Jannetty.
Yeah,
and it's a tragic element. Like, I don't, you know, there's no point really I want to make, but you know, it's just funny how you see that happening, and as great as it is that, you know, it produces guys like Bret Hart. You know, my heart goes out to the Marty Jannettys and Anvils of this world, who were probably, or you know, the New Jacks versus the Mustafas, to bring in some ECW
awesome,
flavor.
Awesome.
I always feel like, man, like, you know, it's great that, you know, Bret's doing great, but, you know, Anvil was probably happy doing that gig for the rest of his life. You know,
yeah. Just,
like, I will pick up the guy and squat down so you could clothesline him. You can get all the accolades, no problem. I'll grab my goatee and laugh. It'll be great.
Right. You can shave your chest. I won't. And we're set. We got a good tag team. You know what's funny is there'll never be two Shawn. To use Shawn and Marty as, I don't know, what do you call that? Like, not a
an analogy.
Yeah, analogy. To use them as an analogy, there'll never be two Shawns out of a tag team, but there could definitely be two Martys. Like, you could have, okay, singles
well,
careers.
I think the Dudley boys in the WWE, and when they split them up, I think that was a good example of that.
Yeah, I agree. Another one of my favorite tag teams, the tag team, I love the Headbangers. I thought they were phenomenal.
Really?
Yes, I swear to God. They had some amazing moves. They had great high-flying moves. They had great tag team technical moves. They were cool. They were funny. They were fun. They were interesting to watch. They were great. And I thought they did everything possible in tag team wrestling. And then it's time for a singles career. And, well, didn't really go any. What was it? Chaz?
Chaz.
He was like the Leave It to Beaver or Leave It. What was he?
Beaver,
like?
Beaver Cleavage.
Beaver Cleavage. I forgot about that. And, you know, Thrasher, did he do anything? Did he end
if
up?
If I'm remembering correctly, I think Thrasher, I can't remember why, but Thrasher was out of the picture.
Okay. Maybe, yeah, maybe, who knows. But
I think he was hurt or something, and that was the main reason why the Headbangers didn't continue or, you know, do some kind of breakup angle.
I thought they were great. And they were also, one other thing on it, since, I guess, because I'll let you bring up another one you like if you want. You don't have to stick with just one, but.
No problem.
Another reason why I think Headbangers were a very great and underrated tag team, they thrived in an era that was a very not popular era in WWF. And that was that kind of mid-90s era, early to mid-90s era, where a lot of the big stars left. You got a bunch of weird gimmicky type guys, and they did very well in that era. And that's pretty tough to do. They carried over into the Attitude Era, but that was kind of like their downswing, you know, in that, because then it became, oh, there's a billion tag teams that are great. But they were a great tag team in fucking 1995. And I can't name anybody who was great in 95 besides Bret Hart singles and Shawn Michaels singles. You know, I don't even. So it's that era that they did very well in. They had some great tag team wrestling moves. I give them that credit.
I didn't watch during, you know, I call the mid-90s the lean years for the WWF. But
ironically, most of the superstars were kind of fat.
Yeah. They had to, you know, it was in the wake of the steroid trials, so they had to, you know, have people well within the bounds of the wellness policy, we'll say.
Right. They're like, he's 280, but pure fat, guys. Pure fat.
Yeah. T.L. Hopper, 100% clean. Right. But if I was going to bring up another tag team, I won't say they were a great tag team, and I think this is just it's more a factor of how much I liked the one guy in the tag team. But
Young Stallions. I got it. Young Stallions.
Oh, man.
Paul Roma.
That.
You love Paul Roma.
Oh, but he won't love me. Was when Honky Tonk Man and Greg Valentine were Rhythm and Blues.
Oh, I loved it. And that was cool to me. Because, you know, those guys, going to a topic we talked about earlier, about regressing a bit, well, they weren't main eventers. They, although, wasn't Hammer, correct me if I'm wrong, because this is kind of before my time, wasn't Valentine battling Hogan for the world title, like, 82-ish, 83 maybe? I don't know.
Valentine definitely had matches with Hogan, but I mean, it was one of those, I think it's fair to say that he was kind of like a placeholder opponent.
Sure. Yeah, until they got King Kong Bundy ready to go or something. But, so they were mid-carders, very successful mid-carders, and then put into a tag team as just a new angle to use them. And I thought they were great. I loved it.
Yeah, they didn't really ever do much, but I loved them. I don't know why. Just one of the things I liked most about him is, remember Gorilla Monsoon? He would refer to Greg Valentine as Boxcar.
No, I don't remember that. Why did he call him Boxcar?
I don't know. I just thought it was hilarious.
And that's your character when we play wrestling games. You're the Canadian Boxcar. That's your character.
Yeah, and you know what? I didn't consciously make that connection, but, you know, in the, you know, wrestling synapses of my brain, I'm sure that's why I picked that name. But
well,
yeah, I just, on commentary, Gorilla would just, I don't know where. He would just refer to Valentine as Boxcar.
Maybe you are Greg Valentine. Well, do you still have that blonde mullet and fucking mushy face?
Guilty.
Total mush face on that. Even as a kid, I was like, man, like how many times was that guy hit in the face with something? Maybe that same foreign object that was on his ankle brace. He hit himself in the face a few times. But
well,
I thought
he would do the, you know, the the slow fall on your face thing. So maybe that had something to do with it.
Could have been. All right, I got another one to throw at you. I guess we'll wrap up with just talking about some fun tag teams we liked over the years. How about the Bushwhackers?
Did you ever see them when they were the Sheep Herders?
That was in, was that in NWA? I think I did.
They'd wrestled in a bunch of places, but most notably Puerto Rico, because I remember reading the old wrestling magazines. I remember seeing them, like, black and white photos, and they were doing, like, I don't want to say ECW style, but they were doing matches with a lot of blood when they were wrestling as the Sheep Herders. And so when I saw them briefly on, when they were sort of doing the introductory vignettes and they were called the Bushwhackers, it was a real, I don't want to say I was disappointed, because I never saw their actual matches. I just saw stills in the magazine, but I remember seeing them thinking, wow, like these guys are messed. And then seeing them come in as the family friendly Bushwhackers, it just kind of was a bit of a disconnect for me. I won't say I didn't enjoy them for what they were.
Man, they were hilarious to me. I gotta admit.
I loved their finisher, where one would grab the other one's head and just use it as a battering.
Well, because you had the, and I love this about them as a tag team. You've got Bush and Luke, and they're like, whoa!
Bush and Luke.
Yeah!
And Butch and Luke there.
What did I say?
You said Bush and Luke.
Yeah, Bush. That's the Bushwhackers.
Bush and Whacker.
That's our nicknames. Off microphone, of course. Butch and Luke. There we go. Enunciate. And Butch was the smart one. He was like the Mo of the Three Stooges.
The smart. It's like being valedictorian in summer school. The smartest of the Bushwhackers.
Right. Well, he was. He had most of his teeth, and he could have coherent sentences. And they're like, he's like, whoa, yeah. Then they cut over to Luke. He's got no fucking teeth. And he's like, yeah. And he's the one that used his head as the ram, the battering ram. And I loved it, because Butch will, he'll rub your face in his armpits and like, I gotcha. And then Luke will just fucking lick your face, because he's like half animal. And I love that there was, you had this tag team, the Bushwhackers, who are just these crazy guys, and one is literally way more crazy legitimately than the other one.
So let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Is there any tag teams, and I'm not talking thrown together ones like we were talking about, or just two random jobbers. Was there any legit, package tag teams, I'll call it, that you will just say just did nothing for you, thought were totally stupid?
Well, I got a fun one to talk about. As a kid, I really liked the Powers of Pain. As an adult, I was like, oh, I see what they did.
Yeah.
But I was as a kid, I thought they were fucking badass. Warlord, Barbarian, Heenan managing you? How can you go wrong? And then I realized,
didn't Fuji manage him?
Was it Fuji or Heenan? Who am I thinking?
Fuji did at some point. Oh, maybe Heenan did originally.
Hey, I'm not sure. I just remember, for some reason, I remember Warlord having a solo career with Heenan, but maybe I'm off. But you've got the Powers of Pain, who to me seemed awesome. They had a really cool finisher. I think was one holding the other one on his shoulders. And they did. It was a Doomsday Device as kind of thing. But then I learned, like, oh, I get it. You're doing the Road Warriors. You're making a WWF trademarked version of that. But as a kid, I really thought they were cool. It's kind of funny how you change your opinion on things after you get a little wrestling smarter. I'm not actually smarter than I was when I was 12, but I am wrestling smarter a little bit.
I remember a couple of years ago, just looking for wrestling stuff online, I found this site. I don't think it's a site anymore, but it was called Autographed to You.
Okay.
And it was a place where if you were a celebrity, you could go there and they would basically manage getting personalized autographs and then mailing them out to people that wanted them. And they had a bunch of wrestlers, but it was a really funny collection of wrestlers. Like, I think I came on that site because Bobby Heenan was on it, and I saw it linked from Bobby Heenan's site.
Okay.
And I was looking at the other wrestlers, and one of the wrestlers on there was the Barbarian.
Awesome.
And the way it worked is, because they had all kinds of celebrities, but they had the Barbarian. And, like, who knows? Maybe it was just a big scam. But you can...
Oh, you don't think they can get the actual Barbarian? Come on. There's no way that's a scam. I mean, if it said Hogan... Okay, it's a scam.
Yeah.
Barbarian,
you're right.
Barbarian fucking made that website. He took an HTML 1 class, got a fucking bootleg copy of Microsoft Front Page, and he made that website because he ain't doing nothing now.
You're probably right. But one of the things you could do is you could pick a customized greeting that I'm supposing the celebrities had input on. And some of them were pretty standard. It was like, you know, happy birthday, best wishes, or whatever. But the thing I remember about the Barbarians, he had the typical ones. It was like, they're really corny, like, you know, happy birthday, best wishes, stay in school. But then, like, his last one was just grrr.
Awesome.
Yeah. Like, G and six R's.
Oh,
like,
man.
If it wasn't, I think it was something ridiculous, like $40. Like, but if it would have been, like, $10, I would have splurged on that. Just, dear Chris. Because, yeah, that was the other thing. You had to say the salutation. So I could have said, dear Chris, grrr, the Barbarian.
Yeah, because he wanted to make sure, oh, you're not going to put this on eBay. I'm putting your name on this thing.
Exactly.
Now, that's just autographs, but I know there's some sites where has-beens, so to speak, well, they'll do, like, recordings, like a greeting or call somebody you know. And that'd be really cool. We should do that on a Shoot Radio. Find, like, if a site exists where there's a wrestler on there, be like, hey, this is the Barbarian. You're listening to Shoot Radio, grr. Like, who put a question mark on the order form? He's like, he's just going to say whatever's on the order form.
It's like Ron Burgundy.
Totally.
But the one tag team to my original question that I remember seeing and just I never understood.
I know what it is. I know it. I'm going to guess it.
Okay.
Demolition.
No.
Oh, because you were doing some shit talking about Demolition way back when. I thought that was it. Okay, what is it?
The Nasty Boys.
Oh!
I remember the first time.
Nasty Boy. Scuzz and Knob.
Sags.
Scuzz and Knob.
Bush and Whacker. all the great wrestlers in there.
We've got all the greats there. We got the Barbarian. We got Bush and Whacker, Scuzz and Knob, and Tatanka.
Interesting you mentioned Tatanka, because at a local indie show last year, I saw...
Don't call him an indie, man. That's not right.
Sorry. Like, that's their N-word.
No, casino is their C-word.
But yeah, I remember the first time I saw the Nasty Boys, I honestly, like, legit total reaction. Knobs, the blonde one, was in the ring, and he's just like this fat guy in a, you know, weird flea market airbrush shirt and a mullet. I seriously thought, like, who is that fat woman in the ring?
Yeah, he had a fat woman body, and the two of them, neither one was in shape. And I didn't like how...
Oh, they were in shape. They were round.
They were round. They were pear shape. But I didn't like them either. I thought they seemed
I thought mean. Their promos were annoying. They now, were did, crap did they, in the ring. I don't understand what anybody saw in them.
Did they come from NWA too?
Yes.
Okay. When I was a kid, because they came a little later on. They were in, I'm guessing, early 90s, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So... To me, in that era of WWF, I was already starting to kind of just get a little bit smarter with kind of, oh, you know, I like this guy, but I don't like this guy. Not because of good guys, bad guys, but just because I just don't like these guys. They're fat.
I'm not going to like this guy automatically because he's a baby face.
Right, no matter what. And the Nasty Boys were that for me. And I knew at the time, I'm like, because I admit I was a bit of a, you know, what I don't know, like elitist or whatever. I looked down, I'm like, oh, those are some shitty NWA guys. You know, I looked down at a lot of those guys, even though, yeah, there are some legends, whatever. I know fucking Ric Flair, president of fan clubs, you know, sending me an email right now. No, he's not. He's dead. But
I don't know. Hey, why is he dead?
I don't know. I thought it was funny to say.
Ric Flair no longer has a fan club because the president died.
Yeah, and it was in his bylaws. You cannot take over if the president dies. It's somewhere in there. But I remember as a kid, I was probably like at this time, from 92, so I'm 15, and I'm looking at these guys like, these are just like some shitty guys that just happen to switch promotions, and that sucks because these guys are bringing down the overall quality of the company And that's fine. You could be fat, whatever. Dusty Rhodes was fat, whatever. But they're just shitty all around. They, you know, they laugh. Okay, so what? It's just, they just sucked. So I agree with you, and I look to them as just an all around piece of shit tag team that, yeah, they'll never be good. Never like them. Did they pair them with who was their manager?
Jimmy Hart.
Jimmy Hart. Okay. They tried, you know, you put Hart with them and you tried to get him over that.
And he
way.
Would come down to the ring with a motorcycle helmet on for some reason.
Oh man. Fucking scuzz. Scuzz.
No, Jimmy Hart would.
No, I know. I'm just talking about the tag team in general. As far as I'm concerned, they're both called Scuzz. SKUZZ is their new name for both of them.
Sure, it's not Bush?
Yeah, Bush and Scuzz.
That sounds like something else.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought them up because they fucking suck.
You know what? I mean, I did talk shit about Demolition in a previous episode, but you know the one thing I really did like about Demolition?
Yes, I do. You love Crush.
Yep, I love
it. Oh, I was kidding. He sucks.
It wasn't so much that I liked Crush. It was more that I like the dynamic when you had, because they kind of did the Freebirds thing where Demolition won the tag team, but you didn't know which two of the three were going to defend the titles. I've always liked that for a heel tag team that has the third member where they can, you know, they swap guys in and out.
I'll give you a third member. I don't like that. I did not like when they brought Crush in. It's almost like...
Now, was it because you didn't like Crush or you didn't like that whole storyline dynamic of having the... You didn't know which two guys were going to defend the title?
A little bit of both. For me, it was... I liked Axe and Smash. I thought they were just heavy metal guys because that's, you know, I was in, you know, it's like, oh, these guys are bad. They're like just evil, badass. They got their cool music. Yeah, they're not really great workers in the ring. They had a decent finisher, you know, we've got one guy's holding them. But I always thought Axe seemed really old. And in my head, it was like, man, they're bringing Crush in to replace Axe, aren't they? Damn. Like, it's like getting replaced at a job or something where it's like, oh, they're bringing this other guy. Axe is going to go away now. It's going to be Smash and Crush. I know it. And so for me, it was almost like, why are you bringing this guy in? These guys are already cool. What are you doing? And then, you know, they go from there to, did they just fade away and then Crush had his solo kind of purple and yellow career, right?
Orange Crush.
Oh, yeah, Orange Crush.
Yeah, I don't remember. I think they just kind of slowly dwindled away because I think it did have to do with Axe, you know, just being, you know, not being able to wrestle anymore.
Was Crush a fake Undertaker?
No, fake Undertaker was Brian Lee.
Brian Lee.
Who Crush was Brian Adams.
Oh, Brian Adams. Okay. The singer.
Yes.
Canadian hero.
On stilts.
Right.
That was I remember in grade 7, a girl asked me to go to the Brian... I almost said Brian Knobs.
Wait, let me guess. No second date?
No, I remember...
It's like, wait, you're taking me... The girl's mom's like, you're taking her to where? A Nasty Boys concert?
No, a Brian Knobs concert. Solo career.
Oh,
no,
scuzz.
A girl asked me, this was like, when I'm thinking back, it's like, man, I got so denied. Like, I was in grade 7, and a girl in grade 8 asked me, like, that's a big deal, asked me if I would go to the Brian Adams concert with her. And I wasn't allowed to go because it was on a school night. I was pissed.
Man. Are you sure it wasn't because you're gay?
I wanted to go. I got told I couldn't go.
Man, is it, like, too intense of a mosh pit or something, or what?
Hey, it was the 80s. It was a different time.
It was a crazy time.
Dude, a girl in grade 8 asked me to a concert when it was a grade 7. It could have been Brian Knobs, and I would have gone. Right. Well, it could have been Raffy.
I bet Brian Knobs had bigger tits than that girl.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment.
And he's way nastier. So I'll take it.
I'll never know.
Yeah, that's true. Where is she now?
Thanks, Mom and Dad. Her name was Faye.
Faye what? Say it.
I don't remember.
Why don't we give her a wrestling name?
Bertha Faye.
Bertha Faye, right. Faye Young. So, yeah, Nasty Boy. That's,
you know what? Like, it might have been Young. She was Asian.
Really? Faye Young?
It might have been.
Oh, awesome. And playing the part of Faye Young is Gail Kim. All right. That wasn't funny. So Nasty Boys, I'm glad you brought that one up. All right, I got another one to throw at you. The Conquistadors.
See, I liked them simply for the fact that they were a tag team, but they were a jobber tag team.
Yeah, I loved it.
And that's something else that didn't see a lot of. Like, I remember they had a bunch of mask guys that were probably the same guys, because I remember they had the Conquistadors, and they also had the Shadows.
Oh, I don't remember them.
Yeah, not a lot of people do. They were just, you know, anonymous guys in, you know, black pajamas and black masks.
So the Conquistadors, they were a jobber tag team, but they were actually a heel jobber tag team because they would do the switcheroo.
That's right.
And that's pretty cool because when you're a jobber, I mean, yeah, you could be face or heel, but you don't really have a thing. But due to the mechanics of tag team wrestling, once again, going full circle to why tag team wrestling allows you opportunities, singles doesn't. There we go. I actually learned the fucking expression that I wanted to say at the beginning. It allows you certain opportunities. That's one of them. You're a fucking jobber tag team, but you got a thing. You got a thing you can do. You switcheroo. You're still jobbers. You're still going to lose, but you got a thing. You're not just, I'm going to get tossed out or I'm going to get pinned or whatever. And that's kind of cool. And you could do that in tag team. You can't do that in singles.
Yeah, and the Shadows would do the same thing.
Okay. And the Killer
Bees. Probably because it was the same guys.
And the Killer Bees, they'd put their masks on only when they're going to cheat. Love that.
That was always weird to me because they were a babyface tag team, but they like openly and unashamedly cheated.
No, but they did it wrong. They cheated in a babyface way. They're like, hey, we got our faces out. We're good. We got face. Hey, we look a shave today. It'd be Brian Blair. Hey. And then it's like, oh, shit. Let's put our masks on, guys. We're going to cheat for 6 seconds. And it's like, put the masks on, get back in, and then it becomes, oh, I won the match. I did, you know, small package. I won. Great. Awesome. Let's celebrate. And they get cheered because they didn't start off as cheaters. Lesson to baby faces out there. As long as you don't start out as a cheater, you could cheat later on and still get cheered.
But it was all done in contemplation of cheating.
Right. Yeah. I think waiting for it to happen. And kind of, we're going to have to cheat. It's going to happen. We're not good enough on our own.
Well, if you're Brian Blair, I guess you kind of have. You got to take what you can get.
Yeah. Speaking of taking what you can get, I bet we can actually get Brian Blair on the phone if he's still alive.
He's like a, maybe I'm mixing it up, but he's like a local, like, state or city-level politician in Florida, I think.
Really? Wait, you're mixing it up? Are you saying they're doing
work? Yeah. He and Jim Brunzell are both, you know, state congressman, but you never know which one's there because they'll put on a mask.
You know what's great? And then one's a Republican, one's a Democrat, and they're switching back and forth, and it's like, oh, man.
They ran on both tickets.
Right. That way, no matter what, the Killer Bees win. We won again. So, yeah, they were pretty interesting. Let's touch on the Rockers a little bit. As a kid, I thought they were phenomenal. They were fun to watch. They were high flyers. That was something that wasn't seen a ton. And they were just, they come out to the ring, they had a lot of energy, and they kept it going. What was their finisher? They do like dueling drop kicks or something, right?
I remember them, they had a couple. They would like both do a missile drop kick.
Yeah, yeah.
Or they would, I also remember them both doing a super kick, like a synchronized super kick.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Except they slapped each other's leg for the sound effect.
Yeah, I think that was pre.
It was like, hey guys, let's slap each other's legs. Oh, that one hurt.
Oh, wait, there's a wrestling match?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, it's funny what you remember when you're, you know, a dumb kid. But the thing that I always liked about the Rockers was, remember after the match, the way they would leave the ring?
What'd they do? I don't remember.
I don't know why I thought this was so cool, because it's really not that big a deal. But they would stand facing the ropes, and they would just sort of, I think it was just the fact that they both did it at the same time that I thought it looked cool. But they would basically lean over the top rope.
Oh, and flip over?
Put their hand on the apron and, yeah, land on their feet.
Yeah, because they did it synchronized. Do you like
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. I guess, yeah, things at the same time was my barometer for whether or not I liked things.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, you're right. It is funny how you remember certain things. We talked about some very old 80s era tag teams. We talked about the Attitude Era, And then we moved it to modern day where they're not really getting a push, where you get two random guys that are in, that happen to be in Nexus or have the tag team belts, and we have no idea they're tag team champions, or they're trying to force tag teams together. And it's just, I hope maybe the writers might listen to this podcast and we can start a little tag team revolution. Here's one catch though. The first tag team that gets a push, you and me.
So who would be the Marty and who would be the Sean when they inevitably broke us up? Or are we one of those two Martys tag teams?
We'll let our Facebook and Twitter fans handle that one.
That's right. That could be our tag team name, the two Martys.
Dueling Martys?
Dueling Martys. There we go.
I'm Marty and I'm Farty. And the Tardy Martys. How about Mardi Gras?
Nice!
M-R-T-Y, M-A-R-T-Y, and then G-R-A-W. Mardi Gras. Oh, raw. Yeah, like Monday. And then when we take over the fucking episode, it's like, you know, like you and I will put the fucking headsets on. I fucking walk down to the ring. I kick Lawler in his sweaty fucking orange mush face. I break his crown. He always protects that shit. I slap Michael Cole with my dick. Then you and me, we put the headsets on. And we're like, it's time for Marty Knight Graw.
License to print money.
What is that?
That idea.
What do you mean? That idea?
It would make a lot of money.
Oh, I get it. I get it. It's good. I'm still thinking about...
Jesus, at least I laugh at your jokes. Wow.
No, I didn't know what you were talking about. I thought that was another line. No. I wasn't trying to not sell your joke.
I know.
I'm still thinking about slapping Michael Cole with my dick. I kind of enjoyed that part. That part was just thrown in there. Let's see where it goes.
You've been thinking about that for a while.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. I just want to break Lawler's crown and smash him in his fucking orange.
I think we just need to do an episode on, you know, you, just kind of like a cathartic therapy episode for you and your problems with Jerry Lawler.
You know, I'd love to do that. And I will tell you that not this year, but last year I went to, there's a convention in Chicago called C2E2, Comic and Entertainment Expo, and Lawler was there. And I went up to him, and I wanted to just yell something at him. But then there were kids there, and I was like, I totally pussed out. But I really wanted to. Just be like, dude, you fucking suck. Stop. And like, stop getting in the ring. You're not putting guys over. Your jokes aren't funny. Stop wearing weird glitter fucking shirts like an asshole to the ring. Why? Don't wear tights underneath your suit jacket and shit. That's weird and stupid. And just hang it up, bro. And I didn't do it, though. I pushed out. Because he'd probably kick the shit out of me.
I was going to say. All right. Well, I think we can wrap this one up. I almost feel like we need a part two to this episode. Because I feel like I could talk for another 2 hours about tag teams.
Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we set aside this topic for a future season? And that way, maybe season two, we'll cover tag teams part two. And kind of, you know, maybe by then some new stuff will come up. It'll be a little bit later because we've got a lot of other topics to cover. I mean, I'd say definitely keep listening to Shoot Radio. You've made it this far already. Episode 6, we're going to be covering gimmick matches. Well, we got titles I want to talk about.
Jerry Lawler.
Well, Lawler, weapons I'd like to talk about.
I'd like to talk about stuff like just the weird, what I'll call the wrestling legal system.
Okay. I know exactly what you mean there. Kind of like the officials, you know, and what's, hey, come on, you got a 5 count there. It's like, wait, I got a 5 count on choking him? I can actually choke him? And that's weird. Why wouldn't you just choke him for 5 seconds at a time the entire fucking match?
Well, because the first time you did it, you'd get disqualified.
4 seconds each time. All right, choke. 1, 2, 3, 4. All right, you're fine. And then choke him. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, he's good. It's fine. Sorry. And choke him again. So, yeah, a lot of topics we can cover. So keep staying tuned to Shoot Radio. Give us some feedback. ShootRadioShow@gmail.com. And also find us online, Facebook.com/ShootRadio, Twitter.com/ShootRadio. We're putting a lot of funny stuff out there. And, of course, all of our episodes and other feedback, you can get on our website, ShootRadio.com. We'll be right back.
You can find more great podcasts at lifestylepodnetwork.com.au.